From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the second day of January 2009. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana. In agricultural news, there's a loophole in the new USDA payment rules. The former Deputy Secretary of Agriculture at USDA has been picked to head up the nation's cooperatives, and we'll review how the financial markets finished the year. Also today, we'll hear a commentary from the Farm Bureau and, of course, check the weather forecast. Meteorologist Don Day will join us for a look at the agricultural weather in just 26 minutes on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of WILL Public Radio from the University of Illinois.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
In Chicago on this Friday afternoon, the first full trading day of the new marketing year, futures finished like this. Nearby March wheat at $6.11, up a quarter of a cent. May futures at $6.23¾, up a quarter. And July at $6.34½, up a half cent. March corn futures $4.12¼, up 5¼. May at $4.22¾, up a nickel. July corn at $4.33, up 5. September 4.43 up 5 cents, and December corn futures 4.56¼, 4¾ higher. January soybeans for the day, $9.70, down 2¼. March at $9.77, down 3. And May, $9.88½, down 3 cents. July at $10, down 2¾. November soybeans, $10.03½, down 3¼. January bean meal futures at $301, up 50 cents. January bean oil at $33.58, up 29 for the day. February live cattle finished $87.10, a dollar and a nickel higher. April at $90.75, up 165. And the January feeders at $95.60 on the day, up $1.55. The March at $185 higher finished at $95.52½. February lean hog futures $93.85 up $297.5. And the April futures at $71.27½. $2.57½ higher. Back at the CME Group, back in the wheat pits, actually. March futures from Kansas City, $6.33½, up 3½ cents. And the March in Minneapolis at $6. Oh, I don't have the Minneapolis Grain Exchange in front of me. Suffice it to say at this point, you're still listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. February crude oil futures, $46.05, $1.45 higher. March futures at $50.30, up $1.71. January ethanol, $1.62, unchanged. The February at $1.65¾, that's up 1 cent. February natural gas, $5.95¾, 33½ cents higher. The March at $5.97½, up 31¼. RBOB gasoline at $1.10¼, 4¼ higher. February heating oil at $1.47¼, up 3¼. Feb propane at $65.01, that's up 3½ cents. And the gold futures down $4.80 at $878.80 on the afternoon. Dow Jones Industrial Average just hit 9,000. It's up 224 at this hour. U.S. dollar at 81.88. 0.73 higher. The CRB index at 232, up 3.24, and the Goldman Sachs at 359.02. That's 9.98 higher. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like from our own Mike Sola. He says tonight in southwestern Illinois, mostly cloudy, a chance of a few showers developing overnight. Elsewhere, partly cloudy. Lows will range from 15 in northwestern Illinois to 42 in the far southern part of the state. Tomorrow in Illinois, mostly cloudy, scattered showers spreading from west to east through the day. Patchy freezing drizzle possible during the morning in the northwestern part of Illinois. In Indiana, partly sunny early, then increasing cloudiness with light rain arriving during the overnight hours. Highs will range from 32 in northern Indiana to near 60 in the southern parts of Illinois. The extended forecast is a series of weather systems will bring intervals of precip and surges of colder air into the region over the next 10 days.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities provides commodities analysis and recommendations for business and agriculture throughout East Central Illinois and Western Indiana. 866-837-9027.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report on a Friday afternoon. Time to check in on the first day's worth of trade for 2009. Mike Zuzalo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana, is on the line. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Hi there, Todd. Happy New Year to you and all our great listeners.
Oh, Happy New Year to you as well. So as we start the new year, maybe we ought to start with the Dow Jones Industrial Average. I know it just dropped back down below 9,000, but there's a number we haven't seen for a while.
You know, it's nice to see as we end 08 and come into 09 that the bonds are breaking, and what that tells most of us, or what the most important thing that should tell most of us is we're probably seeing a return of more investors coming into the riskier assets. They're leaving the bonds, the U.S. Treasuries, because your credit markets are starting to thaw. Your VIX is starting to fall, your LIBOR is starting to fall, and in a consistent manner, they've been falling the last couple, 3 weeks now. And so we've seen a major break in the bond market and the Treasury markets, and that we think is, and we've gotten some key information from Chicago as of Wednesday that this is starting to trickle in from the PIT sources we have, that funds are coming back into the commodity sector. We even see it in complexes like the livestock, which have been hit so hard with the recessionary and depressionary type mindset. So very nice to see the bonds breaking and the reaction to that, these big gains in the equities, big gains in the crude oil, and the fact that the grains, which, you know, tested some key moving averages and support lines in wheat and corn earlier this week, were able to hold those key support lines. One of the first times we've been able to do that for several months now.
Some gains in the crude oil up above $50 in the March contract now.
Yeah, in February, which is now lead month, is up about $8.60 on the week as we go on the air here. And so we had a very, very nice turnaround in crude oil, which was led probably mostly by not just the natural gas, but also by the RBOB. And late in the session, I think right after the grains closed, the Department of Energy said they will start to fill and return oil back into the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. So that adds a little bit of cushion as well and probably underpins the market as well.
How do you feel for the 2009 year at this point? I know it's the first day in. This is a good sign. You think it can hold?
I do. I think the biggest thing maybe we need to point out in a brief amount of time that we're going to cover in detail in our upcoming seminars is this may be one of the best rallies we're going to see in 2009. Energy prices are down 60-80%. That's a tax break to businesses and consumers. The Fed and the World Central Bank's policy are giving us historically low interest rates, historically high liquidity. That should and has been starting to allow the housing and credit markets to thaw. Refinancing is going on again. And the presidential inauguration and the stimulus package is working into the psychology of the investors and the trade as a whole. It's building and allowing us to bring some risk premium back in, getting us out of those safe haven investments of the dollar and the U.S. Treasury. So those three major forces are at work right now, we suspect, and they're allowing the financial and commodity asset sectors to come back. We're about 20 to 25% off our lows from late November, early December. We think maybe we can get another 20 to 25% additional gains on top of what we've seen here. If we do get up into those levels, we're going to be hedging pretty aggressively because that's where you go back to the real economy. That's where you go back to jobless claims. That's where you go back to issues that are going to be with us for several months. And you look at corn as a perfect example.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting hurt on ethanol in both discretionary and mandated blending, and also we had a marketing year low on the weekly export sales today. So you can't shove the bad news and the bad fundamentals into a closet like the market's been trying to do the good news. We have to be, you know, pretty honest and open with what everything looks like in terms of both demand and supply.
You said you'd be a hedger another 25% higher. Can you put some numbers on it?
Well, we still have an overvalue in DSO 9 corn of 525 and Novo 9 beans right around the 1060, 1070 level. We get into those price levels or get within, you know, 5, 10% of those price levels, you'll see us start to move pretty aggressively.
Farmers last week and this week, I suppose, too, were pretty aggressive sellers, actually. As we closed out the year, you think that was tax purposes, needing cash? Maybe they just decided it was a good spot to sell and they'll take the take the check this season as opposed to next? What are the opportunities there?
All of the above, and maybe one additional issue that we aren't used to hearing about. I heard a lot more comments from producers that have to go out and get lines of credit for their next year's needs for inputs, and they were being told in some cases, you're going to have to get your 08 numbers up, you're going to have to get your loan work down in terms of 08, get your assets up before I extend, if I'm a banker or a loan officer, before I extend credit into 09 to pay for higher seed or higher fertilizer prices. So we might have had a little bit, and we'll probably next week also have a little bit more additional cash selling for cash flow purposes, because credit is still tight relative to the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, a bit like, for those who are not farmers, a bit like trying to get your incomes in order before you go ahead into the bank and say, I'd like to borrow money to buy a house or put a new mortgage on it, right?
A great way to put it. And you also have, you know, a little bit more sensitivity right now by producers. They're dotting the I's and crossing the T's. If their free DP's running out, if their end-of-the-year storage is coming up due, where they're going to have to put more money in, they're going to look at that a lot more critically and say, okay, do I want to go ahead and re-up and add more to or lose more on my net selling price if I give more to the elevator for commercially stored grain? That's something they're looking at a lot more hard, I think, than they were maybe last year or the year before.
What's the most important thing that you think you learned as a broker last year from the ups and downs in the marketplace that you might be able to apply to the coming growing season?
For me, it was pretty simple, that the business cycle is still alive and well and kicking, and it will kick your teeth in if it's a demand-led, you know, inflationary-type bias in the world economy. There's supply-led economics, and there's demand-led economics. And if you have a demand-led economic scenario and strong trade, whether it's domestic or global, that business cycle has to be respected. And I think as a whole, the market did not respect it, and we felt like that the sky was the limit and people would be willing to pay whatever they had to, and that just isn't the case. It wasn't the case in the 70s. It wasn't the case in the 80s. It wasn't the case in the mid-90s, and here again we find it's not the case.
Well, let's flip to the other side and go to supply. What do you hear out of South America and the crops there?
Some of the reason why the beans kind of came off their highs, we think, today and finished lower on the week was because we did hear that the Argentine weather in particular is going to be coming back around and maybe providing a little bit more rain late next week. But we are under the understanding that there may be some damage done to the corn supply down there, especially if the rains next week are going to be light and we return to above normal temperatures. That's something we have to really keep an eye on because, as you know, they are the number two world exporter of corn, and the market's been so focused upon the bean side of the equation with Argentina and Brazil. The market will probably have to come back and revisit that, especially as we get to that January 12th crop report.
Anything else to add before I let you go?
I think the biggest fear I have next week, maybe, and what we're going to be talking to clients about, Todd, is the crude oil. This Israeli offensive in the Gaza is starting to really turn the Muslim community in the Middle East very, very negative, and there's a lot of protest. I counted 7 countries in the Middle East that were having protests or riots today because of what's going on there. What we don't want is an escalation and then the world market go back to using the dollar and the U.S. Treasuries as safe havens and take the wind out of the sail of this market rally we've had here the last couple weeks.
Mike, have a good weekend.
You too, Todd. Thank you.
You're welcome. Mike Zuzalos with Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
In today's agricultural news, after seeing USDA's efforts to redefine actively engaged rules for farm payments, Senator Charles Grassley, Republican out of Iowa, is calling on President-elect Barack Obama and Agriculture Secretary nominee Tom Vilsack to better tighten eligibility for farm programs. A strong advocate of weaning non-farmers off commodity programs, Grassley says USDA did not make an effort to define how a person proves they provide significant management on a farming operation in the payment limit details USDA posted in the Federal Register Monday of this week. Grassley says he's disappointed USDA did not do exactly what he and his colleagues set out in the Farm Bill, and that USDA didn't take the opportunity to make real changes to payment limit eligibility when it clearly, he says, had instructions from Congress to do that. USDA broadly defines management as activities that are critical to the profitability of the farming operation. Grassley says that means there's still no quantifiable test that measures what's considered a significant contribution to management of a farm, leaving farm programs open to potential abuse. USDA did make two changes. First, all shareholders must meet the significant contribution and management test. Under the old rules used since 1988, not every member or an entity collecting farm payment had to contribute active personal labor or management. The interim final rule requires each partner, stockholder, or member with an ownership interest to make a contribution of active personal labor or active personal management. And secondly, USDA tightened the ability to add people to the farming operation based on any increase in land. A farming operation can only add one more person unless requesting a waiver under special circumstances. President-elect Obama is meeting with lawmakers. President-elect Obama will meet with congressional leaders today to discuss plans for another economic stimulus package, but the goal of getting a package ready to land on Obama's desk when he takes office January the 20th may be optimistic, given that moderate Democrats and Republicans in the Senate are raising questions about a new stimulus effort, and that could delay finalization of the package. A former USDA Deputy Secretary, Chuck Connor, has landed a new job. Chuck Connor has been named President and Chief Executive Officer of the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives, that's NCFC. It's a Washington, D.C.-based trade association representing the interest of U.S. agricultural cooperatives. The former deputy secretary at USDA brings more than 25 years of national and state government and agricultural and trade association experience to his new position. Connor had been USDA's deputy secretary since May of 2005. He led development of the Bush administration's $300 billion farm bill proposal and the strategy to educate and inform industry constituents and Congress. And finally today, how did the Dow fare in 2008? For 2008, the Dow Jones Industrial Averages fell 33.8% for the year and 38% from its record close at 14,165 in October of 2007. That made the 2008 year the Dow's worst since 1931. The tech-heavy NASDAQ index was off 40.5%, and the S&P 500 slumped 38.5% for the year. For bonds, the two-year yield went from just under 3% at the start of the year to 0.569% in December, while the 10-year yield went from just under 4% to 2.035% early in December. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a production of WILL Public Radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, reminding you that we'll be on the road next week and the following week, at least for a few of those days. On Tuesday and Wednesday next week, the Corn and Soybean Classic Series will kick off, and then there'll be most of the days on the following week. Next week, we'll be in Mount Vernon at the Holiday Inn, and then back here in Champaign-Urbana, we'll be at the new I Hotel out next to the Assembly Hall. If you'd like to come and see that Corn and Soybean Classic, still can walk in. It's $65. Pay at the door. Arrive about 8 o'clock in the morning. More information on those next week. But if you get the opportunity, make sure you put it in your calendar today. And speaking of that, you can go to our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. And click the calendar tab and find all of that information on the Corn and Soybean Classics. While you're there, you can also listen to this program and Commodity Week, which airs tomorrow. It's our weekly look at agricultural goings-on, and this week we'll take a complete look at the 2008 year with NuVi Extension Ag economist Daryl Good. It's all at willag.org. Don't forget to subscribe to our weekend newsletter. Been on hiatus for a while, but we'll return, not this week, but next weekend. It's at willag.org. Now up next in today's listener opinion forum, Shelby County Farm Bureau's Amy Rochka says agricultural trade is the foundation of the U.S. economy.
Farmers historically and increasingly produce more than the domestic food and fiber markets demand, making producers increasingly reliant on export markets to maintain prices and revenues. The farm sector productivity growth has averaged more than 2% annually for several decades. The United States domestic demand for farm products increases less than 1% per year. U.S. farmers must continually find new trade opportunities and expand in international markets for their products or be faced with reducing agricultural production. Agriculture must work to ensure that international trade barriers are reduced and markets open for American products. The best opportunity for American agriculture to compete for new and expanded markets will be realized through the trade agreements with the nations around the world. The U.S. is now the world's largest agricultural exporter. The value of agriculture exports last year was $69 billion. The production of approximately 1 out of every 4 acres of agricultural land is exported. Grains, oilseeds, cotton, and tobacco are 36% of the export share, with livestock products at 16%, horticulture at 21%, and the remainder in processed foods. In the last decade, 18 of the 20 fastest-growing agricultural exports were high-value products, such as pork, grapes, and almonds. Not only is the United States the world's largest exporter, but we are also the largest importer. These imports arrive in the form of horticulture crops, such as vegetables, fruits, juices, nuts, cut flowers, as well as meats, grains, and sugar. Processed specialty products that are imported include wine, beer, pasta, vegetable oils, coffee, cocoa, and bakery items. A narrowing agricultural trade surplus highlights the dynamic and expanding world trade system for agriculture, with the United States as the single most important producer and consumer. Expanding market access for the United States products will enhance the economic growth and development that countries realize through increased trade. Farm Bureau recognizes that United States agriculture depends on overseas markets, and gaining access to those markets is vital to the overall success of farmers. Farmers need the opportunity to compete in global markets on fair terms with better access to expanding markets. This is Amy Rochkis with the Shelby County Farm Bureau.
Amy Rochkis' comments are her own and reflect her opinions. They do not necessarily reflect those of this station. We strongly urge listeners like you to become involved by sharing your views as well. To do so, just give us a call. The number is 217-333-0850. You're listening to the Closing Mark Report on a Friday afternoon. In 2 minutes, I'll return when we'll talk with Don Day of Day Weather about the agricultural weather forecast for the Midwest, the nation, and the globe. It all happens right here on this radio station. And if you miss it, you can pick it up off our website at willag.org, willag.org. Next week on Tuesday and Wednesday, I'll be in Mount Vernon and back here in Urbana-Champaign at the I Hotel, just south of the Assembly Hall, for the first couple of Corn and Soybean Classic meetings. You can get all the details on those meetings at willag.org. The production and protection specialist from Crop Sciences here on the U of I campus, a day-long meeting that I'll host. I'd like to see you there. You can find out all the details at willag.org. Just hit the calendar tab.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Mike Morris in McHenry at 815-344-7213. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
It's National Cream Puff Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1923, Secretary of the U.S. Department of Interior Albert Fall resigned due to public outrage over the Teapot Dome scandal. Fall was found guilty of conspiracy and bribery. He took $385,000 from a friend in exchange for permission to lease part of the Naval Reserves at Teapot Dome, Wyoming. Fall also went to jail for 1 year, the first former cabinet officer sentenced to prison as a result of public misconduct in public office. In 1941, Donald Kleck was born. an American research physicist. He was a co-inventor of fused silica optical waveguide, better known as optical fiber. This was a breakthrough, creating a revolution in telecommunications. The fiber was capable of carrying 65,000 times more information than conventional copper wire. In 1990, Campbell's Soup introduced Cream of Broccoli Soup. It became, at the time, their most successful new soup in 55 years. By the way, it was Campbell's that first realized that if one could remove soup's heaviest ingredient, water, that the price of soup could be slashed by two-thirds because of savings realized to ship the soup around the country. And in 2005, H. David Dahlquist, the creator of the aluminum bundt pan, died in Minnesota at the age of 86. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report on a Friday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us now to take a look at the agricultural weather is Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon to you, Don.
Good afternoon.
Hey, you're not in Cheyenne. You're cheating today, but that's all right. You're up in the mountains someplace, aren't you?
We're up in the mountains, the wilds of Wyoming, where the snow's deep, the sun of the region. I think most of the Midwestern Corn Belt is not going to be in the bullseye of these systems, rather on the edge, but being on the edge is enough to bring some moisture away in the form of rain and snow along the frontal boundaries that moves on through. Up north, it will be all snow, and there's going to be some pretty cold air coming on in behind this system as we make our way to the weekend. In fact, first full weekend, 2009, over many areas from the Rockies east will be pretty cold, although, on the whole, the next 10 days, temperatures are going to be averaging near normal. So we're not setting up for a prolonged spell of bitterly cold weather.
Well, that's good because there's not a lot of white stuff across most of the nation, and certainly the wheat belt would need a little blanket before it gets too cold, I would think.
Yeah, and there's really not much coming. Only the wheat areas of the northern plains, the areas further north, maybe into Nebraska and areas into Colorado, are going to get a little bit of snow cover and a little bit of moisture. But it is still very dry across Kansas, across Oklahoma, across Texas, and those eastern Colorado plains. They're having winter weather, but it's just not coming with very much snow.
On the subject of dry, turn your attention to South America, where they've been dealing in parts of that South American weather and with dry periods, haven't they?
They really have, and Argentina in particular. While precipitation in Brazil has been good for the most part, Argentina has been dry, going to stay dry. There is some shower activity over some portions of Argentina coming, but when you add it all up, they're still looking at a drier than normal weather pattern, and the soil moisture deficit in South America still is poor, especially Argentina. Brazil doing good, but Argentina is digging a bit of a deeper hole with dry conditions, and that's going to continue.
Did you happen to add it all up, by the way, for the year in the United States in terms of precip or numbers that are of interest? I know we had a very cold month of December.
Most of the nation experienced a colder than normal December. The only parts of the nation that did not have colder than normal temperatures were the far southeast Gulf Coast states and the southern plains. So as you go from Florida to Georgia to Alabama to Mississippi to Texas, that's where it was a little warmer than normal. The rest of the nation was either at or below normal in December. And that actually makes two Decembers in a row where most of the nation was colder than normal.
And finally, if we look at the whole year, it seems, I think I heard this, that this was one of the wettest years on record across the Midwest, and the only one that was wetter would have been 1993.
Yeah, and we all know what happened then. So it rarely was wet, and whether or not we're going to see that continue into 2009, from where I'm looking at it, the weather pattern that we're seeing this winter, 2008 into early 2009, showing a lot of similarities to last year. And that may foretell maybe a spring, early summer, similar to this past year. Whether or not it'll be as excessively wet, well, we'll have to wait and see. But odds are good of at least a near normal precipitation season late this winter, early spring.
Thanks much, Don.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. You've been listening to the Closing Mark Report on a Friday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.